This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Coming up tomorrow, October 1st, families across Indiana can start filling out what is known as the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, or FAFSA, form. That helps pay for college and other post-secondary options for education for the year ahead. Money's available, a lot of it, and Indiana's nonprofit financial aid literacy and student loan organization, InvestEd, is ready to help be able to receive some of that money. And with us to talk about it is Bill Wozniak. He's the Vice President of Marketing at InvestEd, which is based in Indianapolis. And Bill, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, how important is FAFSA?
FAFSA is always important, and at a turbulent time in the world like right now, it's even more important because it's the gateway to financial aid for post-secondary education. It's the gateway to getting any of that gift aid that helps families be able to fund college and post-secondary education.
I know that there's just a concern that there are never probably enough Hoosier families who filed the FAFSA form, and so they'd miss out on this very, very important funding. And I know that in large part is what InvestEd has been working on for about 40 years now in trying to get Hoosier families connected with that money.
We are very happy to be in our 41st year. We just had our 40th birthday, and we're now in our 41st year of helping families. And one of the big pushes over the last couple decades has been able to help families file that FAFSA. It's perceived as difficult. It's also, there's a perception out there that many families are going to get no aid whatsoever. And so they bypass it, they walk away from it, or they just don't want to ask someone for help. And so because of that, they miss out on that money. They may then not get the education they would like, or if they get the education, they may take on extra student loan debt that they don't need to take. And so one of the great ways to be able to help Hoosiers is to have the expert, free, friendly help filing that FAFSA, making sure the FAFSA gets filed. And so the family gets the education, they have success, and at the end of it, they have the least student loan debt possible.
Do you think that because of the pandemic, there are probably family members that figure all that money's gone to PPPs and other things, and there's no money left for the programs that support students as well as, why fill out the FAFSA form if there's going to be no money left?
Absolutely. There are so many thoughts out there. And every year, in normal years, if you will, we get calls all the time from families saying, hey, you know, we had a good bonus at work, or hey, we had a second job in the family, or whatever. All these different reasons where families say, well, we're just not going to be eligible. And we always like to tell families there's the Pell Grant, there's the 21st Century Scholars Grant here in Indiana, there's the O'Bannon Grant here in Indiana, but then there's also the money from the colleges, the institutional money. And this is sometimes some money that goes to families that can really help make a difference in the amount of student loans, the student loan debt that's being taken on. And to file the FAFSA, it doesn't take that long. When you're getting help from one of our friendly experts, they're going to help you. You're going to get across the finish line. And the worst case scenario is you file, and in the end, you find out that you're not going to get as much as you thought, or you might not get the aid that you were hoping for. That's possible. But the worst case scenario is you filled the form, you put yourself in position. And I'd like to share one more thing this year.
Okay.
How many families last October and November and December and January didn't file? And then in March and April, there were job losses. Who could have predicted such a pandemic? And then the state filing deadline passes, the form doesn't get filled out, and the situation for the family really changed. And what a difference that could have made. When maybe in October it wouldn't have made that big a difference, but come the spring and early summer, it would have made a big difference.
Tell us about all of the organizations, not only governmental, but otherwise in higher education, for example, that InvestEd works with to be able to help line things up so that people who get the form filled out will know for sure that there might be a chance they'll get some of the funds available.
Oh, absolutely. And we partner. The favorite phrase that many people in Indiana like to say is InvestEd is very bad at saying no. Mm-hmm. And so we love to partner with everybody. And of course, two of the biggest are the Commission for Higher Education here in Indiana, the wonderful folks there. that are in charge of all the grant programs and working with the colleges and all those things. So we partner with the Commission for Higher Education all the time. We also partner greatly with ISFA, the Indiana Student Financial Aid Association, and this is made up of the experts at the colleges, the financial aid office friends, and they do so many great things. And so when we're helping a family, sometimes they name a particular college where they're going to be going, and we're able to just sort of text one of our friends at the college and say, hey, Mary Smith has a problem or Johnny has a question or what have you. And so we partner with them. And then, of course, when you look at things like the TRIO programs and the JAG programs and all these other wonderful different groups, we just find different ways to work together. So we're not duplicating things, but we're partnering so that all the families possible can get the help they need.
I know it's possible that this may be the first time somebody has heard about the free application for federal student aid form. Will you take time here and explain what the form is all about? Tell us a little bit about it and why it's nice to have some help in getting it filled out.
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity. So years and years and years ago, the federal government said we need a form where we can get information about a family so we have sort of a snapshot. We have sort of an idea of what the family's situation is so that we don't just give maybe all the financial aid money to the Kennedys and the Bushes, right? Let's take a look at the family and figure out the situation so we can sort of divide up this money. Over time, the states then used that information to help with their generous programs. So everybody's working off of this information, and the colleges work off this information. So this FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, is the form, just like, you know, the 1040 is for taxes. The FAFSA is that form if you're going to get any type of post-secondary education in the upcoming year. This is the form that collects the information that the federal government, the state government, the colleges, everybody use to determine financial aid. And I'll just throw out one more thing.
Okay.
It's not just your gross income, or it's not just one little data point. Families that have 4, 5, 6, 7 family members, right, that comes into consideration, different things along those lines. How many students are in college at the same time? A family might have one student in college, they don't get very much aid, and then the next year another sibling goes, and now there's two in college at the same time. That plays a big role. So there's all these different variables that go into it, but thank you for the opportunity to talk about this form, which is really the foundation of all financial aid.
In working with the family members as they get the FAFSA form filled out, have you got any stories back there at InvestEd on, I guess you could call them success stories, of how people have been able to have family members go through college almost completely free because they found the opportunities to find the funding out there to be able to pay for it?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I think when I eventually retire one day in about 30, 40 years, when I retire someday, I am going to write a book, and I share so many anecdotes because we sit there, you know, on the cold nights in the cafeterias and whatnot and helping families all across Indiana, and we just love it. But I can tell you for a fact, I was talking to a parent about 2 years ago. I was sitting in a cafeteria, and we were working on the FAFSA, and the parent had not filed the FAFSA, had about 3 or 4 kids. And when the second child went, they filed the FAFSA, they applied to a wonderful school here in Indiana, I won't name it, and they didn't get aid. They didn't get very much financial aid. And then reached out a second time very politely and said, hey, you know, just touching base and what have you. Long story short, they were able to get a significant amount of institutional money, and it was at the end of the process, maybe where some students had changed their mind or additional money had become available. I don't know the genesis of that, but the school came back on the second or third request with a sizable amount that the parent had shared with me. And again, it was institutional money from the school, and the amount that was then able to be gotten in gift aid as opposed to student loan debt, it was significant. And so, you know, yeah, we hear stories all the time, but that was one that always stood out to me because it was a very significant amount, and it was the institutional money from the school And that made such a big difference.
I know that InvestEd always pushes and tries to promote the value of education beyond high school. That's the reason that they want to support people in getting the FAFSA forms filled out and all. But I also know, too, that especially now with the pandemic, for in many cases, and unemployment in general, but the pandemic-related unemployment is forcing many Hoosiers to have to rethink their careers and try for another career and the education they're going to need for it. And I know that you all have to work with the governor's workforce cabinet a lot on this. I imagine they probably appreciate the inroads that you can make in getting the funds available.
We were so honored to be able to help the Commission for Higher Education and the governor's workforce cabinet as a resource, as an information resource. And so when families go for the Next Level Jobs program and they are looking into this retraining or this adjustment in their career, whatever you want to call it, as families are looking mid-career or down the road a little bit from some of the traditional students that we help, and they're trying to figure out, what am I going to do? My job vaporized, or I want to go a different direction. We were so thrilled to be able to just be an information resource on these projects so that when a family finds this grant, when they find this money that's available for this education, they then go, I'm not exactly sure what to do with it. It's a generous grant. It's a wonderful, wonderful grant, but I have a lot of questions. And just like with the FAFSA, they want to do the FAFSA, but they get intimidated or they get nervous. Same thing with some of these wonderful grants that the state is making available. And the family says, okay, I want this, but can you help me with the steps? And that's where our experts sit with families, sit with the potential student, and say, here's how to weaponize that grant. Here's how to go about the steps and go step by step. And again, many times our team reaches out to the particular school that is going to provide the education and say, hey, Mary Smith has this question. You know, there's this concern or this difficult question that they're really nervous about. And we're able to just sort of, you know, smooth that over and just facilitate the answer to get done. And we're just so thrilled to be part of that wonderful program.
Now, since the pandemic has taken hold and has changed a lot, not only has it caused some people to have to rethink careers and other issues involving education, how has it affected InvestEd in trying to help and get these opportunities to sit down and talk with people about filling out the form? As you say, you would spend some time in very cold cafeterias and gyms in school with people trying to help get through the process. What do you have to do now or to try to adjust to the way that the new normal seems to be?
We always try to meet families where they are. Mm-hmm. And so before the pandemic, in person, you know, live chat, emails, phone calls, whatever works for the family, we want to make sure that we're able to meet them where they are. We're able to get them the information that they need. Now, once the pandemic hit, we were in the middle of FAFSA filing, the end of the FAFSA filing season last March. And all these events we had in the cafeteria or in the computer lab, all of us all of a sudden had to be rolled over. We could not just eliminate these events, and so we had to move to Zoom. We had to move to virtual. We had to move to different platforms where we're able to help, and we were able to do so. And now, of course, over the summer, we were really gearing up with our the options we're going to have for families now come tomorrow. But what you have to do is you have to make it a very simple process, a very easily accessible process for those families. But still, we get text messages, we get live chat questions on our website, we get the emails, we still get the phone calls. We do some in-person events. There are schools doing in-person events, socially distanced, mask wearing, all of that. And so we are doing those every week. But obviously, the virtual platforms are something that we're offering as well. So every Hoosier family gets the help they need in a safe manner, the way that works for them, so that nobody gets left behind.
Now, Bill, tell us what the website address is, any other information they need so people can check out InvestEd and get their foot in the door to be able to get the help that they need for their young family members or maybe the adults in the family.
Well, thank you so much. And again, we just always want to point out this is expert help. Our team comes former CHE folks, folks that were at the college's financial aid offices, and just a very expert team. And of course, all the help is completely free. The website is investedindiana.org, investedindiana.org. And you just go there. We have a contact us page with all the phone number and the email address and all that type of stuff. And just go there, get in touch with us, and I promise you it'll be a friendly, expert that is going to help you with any of your funding college and less student loan debt questions.
That's Bill Wozniak. He's Vice President of Marketing for InvestEd, which is Indiana's nonprofit financial aid literacy and student loan organization. And Bill, you have to promise us that when you get done with your career and you decide to gather all that information together, all those great sources that you've been able to put together in your career with InvestEd, and you write that book, promise us that you won't get yourself a suit with question marks all over it so that you look like Matthew Lesko. We've seen enough of him on the infomercials. We don't want to see somebody else like that. Thank you very much for being with us today, though.
Thank you. It'll be a boring blue blazer, I promise.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Coming up next month, month of October, Ivy Tech Community College is going to be offering 8-week courses in a wide range of programs that include, among many others, IT, manufacturing, and healthcare, and also some other short-term certificate options, too. Let's find out all about it. We have today Ivy Tech Community College Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, Dr. Margaret Semmer. And we also have with us as well workforce consultant Dee Dee White and Vice Chancellor for Enrollment Keisha White. Ladies, thank you very much for being with us on Regionally Speaking today. Vice Chancellor Semmer, if you will give us an idea of how things are coming along and getting the program, so to speak, ready for the beginning of the 8-week courses coming up here in the month of October.
Sure. Well, our scheduled production timeline really occurs months and months in advance. What's unique about what we're doing now is that we've retooled and restructured our schedule a little bit to meet the demands of the unemployed contingency in our community right now because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And what we're focusing on is trying to identify the short-term certificates that lead to high-skill, high-wage employment without a big time investment. Many people hear college and they think, well, that's years of work and energy, and I need a job now. I need a skill now. So that's what we're really focusing on in the second 8 weeks of the schedule, and we're really planning to start off some certificates that will help individuals gain that certificate within 2 or 3 8-week sessions, so they can start off in October and hopefully have something in their hand that's gives them skills for employability by, you know, next May or next March if they're lucky. Mm-hmm. That's our plan right now.
Dr. Semmer, because we are still in the midst of the pandemic and things have been changed, I guess, to make adjustments for the fact that they were not back open to in-person sessions to speak of as usual, what precautions, if there are any new precautions, that Ivy Tech Community College is taking to try to deal with this?
Sure. We're actually taking every precaution that is identified through the Indiana Department of Health and the CDC, and we will continue to do that, which includes social distancing of 6 feet or more. Everybody will be wearing a face mask in a classroom where we do have students. The capacity of our classes that are face-to-face are definitely less than they were prior to the pandemic, and we will continue to use specialized cleaning protocols and everything that is required to make sure that everybody is safe and feels safe in our classrooms. Of course, we have a large number of courses that are online and virtual as well. We know that some of our coursework, however, cannot be completed unless we're in a face-to-face environment, so we are remaining very strict standards for safety in those classrooms.
Now, Vice Chancellor White, can you give us an idea from the campus standpoint what folks that have signed up for this next series of classes have had to say, not only about the precautions that are being taken, but how this is going to affect the classes they're going to be taking?
Well, that's a very good question. The pandemic has not truly stopped our students from the learning capacity that we provide for them. Dr. Semmer's staff has been phenomenal with translating those face-to-face classes to virtual online, and we have a variety of delivery models that we offer to students. So it hasn't affected us that much because a lot of students are now turning toward doing the virtual option or online option as a method of studying for their program. So we haven't lost a beat there. Again, going back to Dr. Simmer's point, Right now, this second 8 weeks, we're really trying to just ramp up the excitement about getting the certificate to get you out into the workforce. So we're seeing more Hoosiers come back to us, you know, within that capacity to get a quick turnaround to get them employable. So with that in mind, the enrollment, we're still looking good for this fall. Of course, it's not over until December when our classes end and we get the end of the term count.
Now, Dee Dee White, I know because you are a workforce consultant, you get to work most closely with students that were trying to kind of fashion something that will give them not only a beginning career, but maybe a change in career. How have things changed now because you've had to do things a bit differently with Ivy Tech Community College? Has it really changed the mission in any way?
Not changed the mission at all. We continue to offer demand-driven courses. Demand-driven training that will allow folks to very quickly get into the workplace. We're constantly in communication with our industry partners. Trying to determine what kind of needs they have, where the open seats are, and what we can do to train people. Certainly with a lot of things that that we do for workforce training requires hands-on training. And what we're doing is we're bringing folks in, able to keep them, safe and socially distanced through the hands-on training. And then we quickly pivot to a virtual environment after that.
When you have such a situation as this, I'm sure it has to have some impact on enrollment. Has there been any change in enrollment that any of you are aware of that we need to know about here in Northwest Indiana? Obviously, it's just a matter of getting everybody together and trying to deal with the pandemic and in turn deal with the change in the way the classes are being handled these days.
Yeah, so enrollment right now is still steady. It has not affected us negatively, to date. Again, we're still in registration enrollment mode until after our second 8-week classes start, and classes will begin October 26th for our second 8-week start. So we're still in that frame mind of we still have an opportunity to provide services to our students, both prospective and current students, and getting them to register for our second 8-week classes.
Now, ladies, I know there are also opportunities for express enrollment events that are happening at Ivy Tech Community College. Can any of you tell us more about it?
Sure. We host a variety of events, but our most popular event is the Express Enrollment Day. Mm-hmm. It's a day set aside for our students, both new and continuing, to go through the process, whether they need to complete an application, take our assessment test, and then do registration with an advisor, or they're a continuing student, they just need to come in and register. That's a day set aside to get everything either started or completed in one day. So it's the one-stop shop kind of method. We offer that both virtual. We have a virtual portal. It's called our Ivy Tech Front Desk. We have that virtual portal via Zoom. And then we do also have our in-person or face-to-face locations that are open, Crown Point and our East Chicago location. So those events happen. We typically try to do one every Thursday. Last week we had an Express Enrollment Week. It was a week long of activities for our students to engage with us to get the process either started or completed.
Now, I know that on our program we're finding out more about FAFSA, about the period where people can be able to sign up to apply for this additional financial aid to be able to pay for the classes. Anything special that's planned as far as Ivy Tech's concerned to help family members and students along in the process?
Wow, that's a really good question, because money factors into a lot of what will give students the mindset, going to school right now right for me? Is it the right time? Sometimes it can never be the right time, but when you have the finances that are there to support you, which we do, We have financial aid here available for our students. We also have Ivy Tech Scholarship. We have other in-house grant opportunities. We have our foundation department, our development officer, our development director, I should say, Cindy Hall, has done a phenomenal job raising funds to support students who don't have the funds or the capacity to pay for classes, to pay for books, to pay for a laptop, things of that nature, to secure our students in knowing that they can be successful when they register here with us at Ivy Tech Lake County.
I just wanted to add that we also have funding through Next Level Jobs. We partner and refer folks to Work One for WIOA funding when we can. You know, what we're trying to do is remove all barriers. All of us on both sides of the house, both workforce and the academic side of the house, we're always doing what we can to remove any barriers that folks may face in coming back to school.
Dr. Semmer, I'll let you have the final word here as we wrap up our conversation today. Have you seen that things have gone well here in the first 8 weeks as we've gotten into this academic year with the pandemic going on?
You know, it is amazing what's happening in the classrooms, both the face-to-face classrooms and the online classrooms. I'm just amazed by the ability of our faculty and our students just to change and pivot and be flexible in this very trying time for people. I see students embracing their education. I see faculty embracing their ability to be influencers and to be motivators. It's so much more difficult in this environment to learn, to teach, you know, to be a part of this system yet. But what I see from my angle at Ivy Tech, we've got just a world full of champions that are really, you know, coming together to make sure that education continues and that people continue to learn and that people are still able to achieve their dreams during this really difficult time. I see so much positive in what we're doing and so much good for our students. It's been really surprising, and it's been really enjoyable to watch how we've made this work for everybody.
Well, ladies, thank you very much for being with us to talk about a very important topic of helping people not only to better their own education, but also to change careers if necessary by taking courses with Ivy Tech Community College. We've been speaking with the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, Dr. Margaret Semmer, with the Vice Chancellor for Enrollment, Keisha White, and from Ivy Tech Community College, the Workforce Consultant, Dee Dee White. And once again, thank you for being with us today, and the best of luck for the next term of courses coming up here beginning in October.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A Valparaiso University psychology professor has come up with an interesting way to help parents cope with the coronavirus pandemic. And we have with us Professor Amanda Zelit-Husky to talk about it. And thank you very much for being with us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
What gave you the idea to create this website called Pandemic Parenting?
Well, I was one of them, right? I was struggling right along with everybody else. I have three young boys, and so as we all abruptly were thrust into, you know, remote learning in the midst of, you know, in our case, a two-parent working household. And so, I was struggling right along with everybody else to figure out, you know, how are we going to do this? And so I launched a study, as sometimes social scientists, you know, just tend to do, is I want to try to understand the very phenomenon that I am also struggling with. And this is an interesting opportunity to learn from a crisis, really, when we were right at the beginning of it. So I launched a study to try to look at the impact of, just being quarantined and socially isolated and shifting our schooling experiences on both kids and parents. And so when I got started looking at the data from that study, we had, you know, over 450 families participate from all over the U.S., which was really amazing. And looking at that data, you know, recognizing that in the science process, you know, this stuff takes a long time to publish. And I was sitting on data that could be helpful to people right now as we were entering round two of remote learning this fall. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to a colleague in Canada, Dr. Lindsay Malloy at Ontario Tech, who had done a similar study. And you know, we just got to talking and realized, there are ways we can be helpful. We can share this data, I think, in more accessible ways immediately for people to be able to use it now as they're trying to make these decisions and wrestle with a lot of the stress in their families. And so I think we just thought it was a unique opportunity to be of help, to use our expertise and resources, and to use the data to really get it into the hands of people who could use it right now.
Well, I don't want to use a trite phrase, but I guess you could say that like minds think alike.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
What was some of the information that you got together from your joint research and or separately and you put together to become a joint research to take a look at the issues here, and especially of having the youngsters that have to learn remotely or maybe a combination of in-person and remote learning?
Yeah. So in my study in particular, and this is all still preliminary findings as we continue to work through the tedious process of data analysis. But one of the things that emerged pretty clearly right away is the different impact on parents who had young kids at home, so elementary age, versus parents who had kids in middle school or high school, or even, you know, young adults who had to return home from their college experiences. So, and obviously, you know, that makes sense. I mean, there's just much more hands-on supervision and involvement you have to have as a parent in your child's remote learning, and just even in supervising your children and keeping them entertained during the day when they are younger versus when older kids can be more independent, don't need as much help or monitoring as they're working through their remote learning. So I think that was something that emerged pretty clearly. We just saw parents experiencing different levels of stress depending on their kids' ages. We also saw a big difference for parents, of course, who had children with special needs that, you know, again, as a working parent trying to manage the very unique demands of children with different types of special needs, that part placed some extra stress, right, higher levels of stress on parents working through that. Of course, parents who were working, working full-time, and sometimes that meant working from home, so those who were able to shift their jobs to working from home, but those who were essential workers or just worked in jobs that they couldn't work from home, we saw different impacts of stress there, and of course, that translates then into different rates of behavior problems and emotional challenges in their kids, because what parents feel, kids often feel, and this is this reciprocal relationship, whereas kids' stress and behavior and emotional issues increase, so do parents' stress and vice versa. So that was some of what we found in our study. Dr. Malloy is still combing through some of the results of her study, which in some ways focused more on how parents were talking to kids about COVID-19, some of the conversations they were having, what that looked like, how to talk to your kids about it. I'm excited to see those findings as well.
We're talking with Valparaiso University psychology professor Amanda Zelahusky about a new website that is out there called Pandemic Parenting to help parents navigate the challenges of the coronavirus pandemic we're going through. And did you find that this was probably the fastest way to get this information out, that is, opposed to the usual academic methods?
Yeah, absolutely. So just even leveraging technology, of course, and social media, you know, recognizing that's where a lot of us are getting our information now. You know, we spend a lot of hours, I know I certainly did, kind of panic scrolling on my phone, you know, through headlines and just trying to find accurate information. And part of what inspired us to do this was realizing that, you know, we were having conversations with friends over social media and text and email, you know, as friends were desperately struggling for resources or how do I deal with my kids. And I think Dr. Malloy and I realized, you know, as psychologists, we just sometimes take for granted information that we have been trained to know or have access to or can find answers in really accurate and science-informed ways. So it just seemed to us an easy way to let's get science-informed information out there. Let's find better ways to disseminate psychological science that people can have faith in, can trust in this era of not really being able to tell the difference between what is accurate information or not. So one of our goals was to really curate a lot of the articles and blogs and information that exists out there to pull together really science-informed and trustworthy sources, you know, on each of the topics we were tackling.
Webinars is part of what you can find on Pandemic Parenting, and I understand that there is a webinar actually coming up tomorrow, Thursday, October 1st. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, that's right. So we host biweekly webinars. They're always free. We intentionally do them fairly late in the evening for most time zones. We do them at 9 p.m. Eastern time mostly on Thursday nights. And that's because, again, we're right there with you. We recognize that you're either working during the day or it's the middle of dinner time and bedtime chaos. And so we try to set them at a time that is accessible for a lot of people to attend live so that they can pose questions to our various guest experts and panelists, but they're also always recorded. So don't ever worry if you can't attend live. We always post the recordings along with a bunch of resources to support that topic on the site, which is pandemic-parent.org. So our guest tomorrow, we're so excited to have Dr. Bruce Perry, who is an internationally renowned child psychiatrist and trauma expert. He has been involved in so many conversations over the many decades of his career, but especially recently around, you know, helping children and families as we all struggle through this pandemic and the changes it has meant for a lot of us. So what we're going to talk about with him on Thursday night is just building resilience, how experiences of stress in manageable doses can actually be a good thing for both kids and parents to continue to strengthen their resilience and build some of those coping skills that in this time where I know as parents, a lot of us are worried about protecting our kids from a lot of the things that are going on around them or being worried about how they'll be impacted. Dr. Perry's going to talk with us about ways to channel that in productive strategies and, again, ways to just sort of build all of our resilience moving forward.
Now, what is that address if people want to check out Pandemic Parenting?
So it's www.pandemic-parent.org. If you follow us on social media, you'll find all those accounts on our website where we're constantly posting new resources and announcements.
Valparaiso University psychology professor Amanda Zelhusky talking about the new website that she and her colleagues have created, some of the colleagues from outside the university. It's called Pandemic Parenting. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Coming up tomorrow on the Thursday program, we will pick up topics involving transportation and business with the Times of Northwest Indiana reporters Andrew Steele and Joseph Peet. And we'll also have Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith on hand. He's interviewing all three of the Indiana gubernatorial candidates. We hope you can join us for tomorrow's Regionally Speaking.